Naturally speaking. Conferences are a vital part of academic life. Researchers are able to engage the wider scientific community by presenting and discussing their work and networking with future collaborators. Of course, it's also a chance to travel and visit new parts of the world, and if there's time, to sample the local beers or other delicacies. It all sounds good to me. However, conferences can also be pretty chaotic, pretty stressful, especially if you're presenting, and a breeding ground for awkward situations. So, how do you maximise productivity, minimise those Larry David moments, and get the most out of your time at a conference? I spoke with three confident conference survivors for some hints and tips. Here's what they had to say.
Survivor's Guide to Academia.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the second in our Survivor's Guide series, where today we're going to be learning how to survive a conference. So, I'm sitting with a fresh discussion panel.
Sort of.
Sean's here as usual, but maybe we could start by introducing ourselves.
I'm Rob Critchlow, I'm a third year PhD student.
I'm David Bailey, I'm a lecturer here at the Institute.
And I'm Sean Killen, I'm also, well, I don't know what I am. I'm a NERC fellow here at the Institute.
He just lurks in the department. Nobody really knows who he is. Oh, and I'm Zara Gladwin. I'm a PhD student. So we all managed to introduce ourselves there, more or less, with relative ease. It wasn't too awkward. But at a conference, it's striking up a conversation with, you know, a random stranger. It can be quite daunting. Mm. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was networking and what's the best way to strike up a conversation with a stranger at a conference. Any ideas?
I just love the silence after that. You're asking for advice on how to strike up a conversation.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a big part of conferences, isn't it? You know, networking.
Yeah.
It's the main part.
Yeah, honestly. I don't know. I think it's always awkward. I remember more when I was a PhD student, it was a little awkward going to conferences, and you always got the impression that everyone else knew each other there, and you're kind of the outsider.
It's quite intimidating.
Yeah, it can be quite intimidating for students going to conferences for the first time, or even for the first few years going to the same conference. But I think one thing to keep in mind is that there's a lot of people there that are in the same situation, especially other students. And sort of once I got over that, it's really easy to actually go up and talk to people. You can point out the other people that are looking really awkward and go talk to them. It's a skill.
A friend of mine walked all the way around the icebreaker reception at a big conference once. There must have been about 2,000 people there. She didn't know anybody and was so shy that she walked around the whole icebreaker reception and just left again.
So they didn't have actually anything to break the ice. There's no nothing to force people to talk to each other or encourage them.
Yeah, you could talk to whoever's in the queue for the bar.
Yeah, but so there was a solid chunk of ice.
No global warming here.
That first icebreaker is usually when people are getting together again after a while.
Yeah.
So that, you know, people are chatting to everybody they know.
Yeah.
If
you don't know anyone, you're kind of standing there.
Yeah. Maybe that's a problem with conferences then. Maybe that's something they should introduce.
Yeah.
You have some kind of organized icebreaker.
Well, a lot of them do. I do recall going to things where you're sort of meant to, they'll sit you at a table with a group of other people that you don't know and kind of force you to talk to people. They do that at the SEB conference.
So they sit
sometimes.
You down. You don't know who else can
I think you actually have to specifically sign up for that event. But
if they don't have that,
is
it just as simple as going up and saying, hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really. One thing that's useful too is if your supervisor can introduce you to people as well, which that was something that I always was lucky enough to have a supervisor that would actually do that, but I know other students going through at the same time as me, their supervisor wouldn't necessarily do that, and they'd kind of be left out in lurch, because it's really big if your supervisor can introduce you to their colleagues and other big names.
Yeah,
it makes a huge difference. You'll get to talk to much more senior people than you will if you just talk to the people who are also just milling around, which is good.
Yeah.
So that does definitely help. In general, just if you go to a conference where you at least know a couple of other people, they'll know a couple of other people you don't know, and you can really build your network that way. But it is very difficult if you literally don't know a single other person.
Yeah, I remember I went to a conference one time and my supervisor wasn't there. It was just me and one other guy from my lab. And we ended up hanging around with this complete loser the whole week. It was in Vancouver.
That was going to be my next question.
Well, that was Dave Bailey, actually. That's how we met. Yeah. 2002, was it?
Yeah, it didn't turn out very well.
So how did that come about? How did you...
We ended up, well, we were sort of like roommates or something, right? Just randomly put in the same apartment, like wacky sitcom style. Like,
yeah. Had you met before?
No, never. It was totally random chance.
Wow.
Yeah, it was funny. I remember you coming back from a run or something one morning, and you were shocked because you'd been running along like a nude beach or something at UBC. You're like, why is everyone naked?
No, I thought it was a nude beach. Okay. I was scaring other people.
I knew it involved you in a nude beach somehow.
No, I didn't realize until later that, yeah, that was a notorious naturist beach that I'd been running on.
Okay, well, that's certainly a conversation starter.
Yeah.
But once you've got into a conversation, how do you get out of one without being rude? Because that's another problem. You know, there's only so many times you can say, I'm just going to the toilet or I'm just going to get another sandwich before people think there's something going on with her bladder that isn't normal. So how do you move on?
I don't know.
Usually your conference, you're usually talking to people in between other things anyway. So the worst case scenario is you'll be stuck with somebody until the start of the next set of oral sessions, and you can pretend that there was one you were interested in and head off to one of those or something like that, or just pretend there's someone else that you've seen that you need to talk to.
Is it worth, do you carry around business cards or anything like that?
No, I don't, but there's been times when I wish that I had, for sure. I think that's something that... Yeah. I don't know. Do you do that?
I feel exactly the same way. When somebody gives me a business card, I think, oh, that was a good idea.
Yeah.
But I've never, ever had business cards.
Yeah.
And you can get novelty business cards these days. You can get, you know, in the shape of a fish or your study species.
Cool. Yeah, that would be a bad idea.
Rob, you would get a business card in the shape of, like, a virus or something?
What about
in the shape of a stats package?
Yeah. A crayfish shape one. That would be quite good.
That would be quite good. So are you all quite successful networkers? Have you met people and then collaborations have come out of meeting at a conference, or friendships even?
Some definitely. I mean, there was a person I did do the classic boring thing, going up to them talking about their talk afterwards, and that led quite quickly and directly to a small collaboration and a paper, which is quite unusual. Most of the time, it's sort of cementing relationships. You know, you see the same people year after year, and building relationships and talking about projects and things like that. More of that.
I've never gone into it actively seeking collaborations. It's more, for me anyway, is meeting people, or like you say, cementing relationships where sometime in the future something might arise, or you feel a little bit more comfortable emailing them or calling them up in the future or seeing them at another conference. But I don't know, that's never been about going up to someone and immediately asking them if they want to work together.
I've got this great idea. You're the person.
Yeah. I don't know. What about you, Rob?
No, it's good to go back to conferences and knowing that, you know, recognize people who are working in similar fields. So it's easy to go and talk to them again.
Yeah.
I think definitely if you're working on something quite obscure as well, it's sort of reassuring to know that there's other people that are also, you know, devoting their lives to something strange.
Yeah, you're not that weird.
Well, I mean, one person I did speak to, which was incredibly useful once. There was a guy who worked on scallop swimming, which is what I did my PhD on. And I was absolutely terrified of this guy because his papers were incredibly complicated, full of masses of equations. And I just knew that, you know, this guy would be able to spot the massive flaws in my work from a million miles away. And I was, you know, this guy's work terrified me throughout my PhD. And I eventually got to speak to him about 6 months before the end. And after about 5 minutes later, I realized this guy was actually really nice, was just really happy just to talk about it.
Yeah.
Clarified a few things, which made me much less concerned about what I was doing. It was incredibly reassuring. It was very terrifying going up to this guy and speaking to him, but I was incredibly glad that I had. Sometimes you just got to take the leap, really, and just go and talk to somebody about how worried you are.
I think, too, it goes back to what you were saying in the beginning, how do you start conversations? And another thing to remember is the whole point, reason why these people are at a conference is to talk to people for the most part.
Yeah.
So, and most of them are really nice, so there's not really a lot to be worried about there.
But, yeah, don't be scared.
Yeah. So in summary, networking, shy bear and skate neighbor off, kill those social demons, say hello, and you'll get more out of it. Networking obviously is a big part of conferences, but so are the presentations. So maybe we could talk about them for a bit. So posters, shall we start with posters, actually?
Sure.
So have you had experience presenting posters?
I always really like doing posters. I know a lot of people seem to bash posters a lot, think they're a waste of time, but a lot of my best interactions actually at conferences have been with posters. They're relatively easy to put together, and you have it sitting there the whole week. You don't really have to do a whole lot with it, except for the poster session. But
so you find that people generally come up to you and will engage with you when you're...
Not always. I think that's... The thing, though, I think a lot of people have maybe had a poster experience where they haven't got a lot of reception and they think it's a waste of time and they never do it again. But I've definitely had, you know, at least a handful of times where I've had really good conversations with people at posters. But I've had other times when there's been no one, so it's...
But that's quite... always going to be the way.
Yeah.
If people don't like the sound of the title of your poster, they're just going to walk
away. Yeah.
The worst time I had was with a poster that was really just not in the right conference.
Really? That I had a, say, so my PhD was on scallop swimming, so physiology type stuff, and it was basically an ecology meeting, and nobody was interested apart from one person who worked on the ecology of the same species.
Yeah.
Who came up and talked to me for about 5 minutes.
Is but all it might take is one person to become interested.
Is that because it's a broad conference? Or?
Well, it was an ecology of the Antarctic Sea Ice Zone conference, and I've been doing some video analysis stuff on Antarctic scallop species. So it really was an ecology conference. But so in general, making sure that you're presenting at the right conference.
Yeah, that's a probably good idea.
And I've made that mistake with talks as well, though, where I've been in the wrong session or whatever.
Yeah, planning your session's a big one. Before we move into talks, though, one thing that I should mention is with posters, a really good way for engaging people, and usually really big names, is to simply enter... Usually the conferences will have some kind of poster competition for students, which for some reason, and I've never been able to figure this out, most students don't bother to enter. I don't understand why they wouldn't. There's usually a box in the registration, like, do you want to enter your poster in the competition? Just check yes, because then the judges will have to go around and look at your poster, and they'll normally talk to you about it, and it'll normally be someone big in your field. And the other thing is, because there seems to be so few people that enter these competitions, there's a very good chance that you'll win. I've seen at conferences before people win because there's only two or three posters in the competition, and then that's something to put on your CV.
Yeah. A couple of things I've noticed that are quite useful in posters as well is if you have your photograph in the corner of your poster, then people know that you're the one that presented it.
Yeah.
And also, I've seen people print out copies of their poster and have it, you know, in a Polly Pocket
attached,
and then people can take that away. Because I've taken sheets away and read them later on. Because sometimes it's a bit awkward standing reading a poster for you. Know,
yeah. Actually, poster sessions are a good source of awkward moments. Actually, too. Because when you're standing there, like at your poster in the session, people come up to read it. You feel like kind of like you're a salesperson.
Yeah.
In a story. You're
like,
can I help you? I'll just be over here. And then you're kind of watching them read. It's always really awkward.
Yeah. One thing I noticed that was interesting at the World Fishes Conference that was a couple of weeks ago, a new thing they have is electronic posters. Yeah. So all the posters were loaded up onto these pods and these screens, and you could go and... Maybe that's the future, I don't know, or if it's better to stick with traditional poster.
Were you there for that?
Yeah, well, I organised the e-posters. This has been my job for about the last year to try and work out how to make all that happen. Yeah.
Did it go well?
Some aspects of it I thought were really good. I think the good thing about the e-posters is you can just go up to any one of the terminals and you can just browse through all of the posters for the whole conference. So for us, there are about 280 posters, and you can just browse through any of those. And then you can have a lot more... content, because we allowed up to 3 slides, videos, animations, all that sort of thing as part of it. So there's a lot of scope to do really interesting things. So that side of it was really good, and I saw lots of people browsing away at the e-posters, you know, in all of the breaks. The harder bit is how you link up people, because we only had 30 screens for nearly 300 posters. So it is harder. You can't just have a place that's going to be your spot for the whole conference. So that's a bit more difficult. We had a go at a way of linking people up, which was okay. It didn't really work all that well.
So linking up the author of the poster to
people who are interested. Yeah. One of the things which is easier now, of course, is that it's easy to put your contact information on the poster. So, you know, and we had free Wi-Fi at the conference, so I sort of got an email address off on the posters and emailed the person and arranged to meet up with them. And that's all, you know, that's all possible now. Now everyone, you know, has Wi-Fi, you know, Wi-Fi and email on the phone. So I don't, maybe we don't even need traditional poster sessions anymore, that it's just so easy for people to hook up with each other separately, that we can just let people browse and then meet up during any of the sort of conference break. Yeah.
You could have them loaded up on like a Facebook page or something, and then people could comment on it.
Definitely, one of the nice things about conferences, though, with the old style posters, is that, you know, you can grab a glass of wine or something at one of the social events and just kind of wander around. Everyone has a few drinks.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's the same. I haven't experienced the posters thing.
Not enough.
Okay, shall we move on to oral presentations? Okay. Do you enjoy giving them?
I personally enjoy giving them. I don't like the build-up to them, practicing. I hate practicing talks, but it's something that's necessary. I don't know, do you guys?
I almost always enjoy it once I get going.
Yeah. Mm.
But yeah, it can be absolutely terrifying waiting to start.
Mm. I don't know if I get that nervous anymore. It's more just when I'm practicing, I just find it so hard to get through it. Every time I make a mistake, I'm just like, I'm going to start again. But you really, when you're practicing, you just have to plow through. But
does it depend on the size of the conference? So if it's a bigger conference, like a British Ecological Society, or a more specialised conference, does it make a difference?
Yeah.
A difference in terms of how nervous you get?
And how you present it, or...
What do you think?
I think the questions are scarier than the actual presentation. So, you know, if you are presenting at a bigger conference, a more general conference, then people are less likely to have very specific questions that you might not know the answer to. Whereas if you're presenting to specialists, that would maybe be scarier. That's just me personally. But
the most scared I was at the deep sea biology meeting once. I'd just been complaining about how I always ended up talking on the last day of conferences. And somebody said, "Hey, the running order for the deep sea biology conference is out." And I was the first talk.
But then you get it over with.
It was all in one session, though. So it was all in plenary, basically. And we just basically had the people saying, "So, welcome. Wow, it's 3 years since the last deep sea biology meeting. Aren't we all excited? We're looking forward to a load of really amazing stuff. And here's David Bailey talking about eels."
Eels are pretty cool.
I was so terrified.
So when's the best time to talk, within the conference?
The last day is not good for a few reasons. One, you're stressing over it the whole week, but then also, if you're giving your talk on the last day, you don't get to speak to anyone about your talk after. Mm. If someone really liked your talk, they're probably not going to have a chance to come up and talk to you after.
Yeah, nobody knows who you are.
So I would prefer to get it done as early as possible.
So as presenters, do you have any tips for, you know, having the biggest impact with your talk, or the best way to prepare?
Practice is really important. I don't like practicing, but you have to really... one of the skills, I think, for the best speakers is to make it seem like it's off the cuff and relaxed. But really, a lot of work goes into having it look like that.
It's like stand-up comedy.
Yeah, exactly like that, actually. Because you can practice, but if you get up there and it seems too rehearsed, then that's a bit of a problem. But if you can make it seem like you're relaxed, then it's a skill. It's hard to do. But
and less content. Usually would be better for most people.
Yeah.
Most people try and jam too much stuff in.
Absolutely.
I don't know if they're just trying to look clever or what, but it's most of the time, most of the people in the audience are not going to have read all the latest material on it. So,
and they're also not going to care about all of your 800 figures that you're putting into the talk either.
So really going back a step and just making sure that people can remember one or two key things that, you know, you really want them to remember.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wouldn't even worry about not using up your whole time slot if it means just having a really clear message and getting it over well.
Yeah. Well, one of the very worst things you can do is go over time. It gives a really bad impression that you're disorganized. It also throws off all the scheduling for the whole session and other people that are, since the session's going on at the same time, everyone gets thrown off schedule, and then the whoever's chairing has to awkwardly get up and not take any questions after. Like, okay, then, so moving on, we don't have time. But it's just really bad. You don't want to go over time at all.
So yeah, practice in the shower, get your timing right.
yeah, definitely.
Okay, on to the important stuff: social events. So quite often associated with big conferences, there are, you know, ceilidhs, dances, dinners, all kinds of things. Are they worth it? Are they worth the money? Have you got much out of going to them. Yeah, Rob, have you partaken in
I've never
much
paid extra to partake in extra social events. But the ones that are put on are usually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to the Cayley at the World Fisheries Congress, even though I loathe Cayleys with all my heart. because I was on the organising committee, I thought it would be a bit weird if I didn't go. And it was actually quite a good laugh. I was persuaded to dance once.
Yeah.
And you loved it.
It was quite good fun.
I had a moderately amazing time. It was a little bit awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it depends on the person, but I think that's totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
That's when people are at their most relaxed. So if you're worried of going to talk to people, and I don't know, if you don't want to go up to someone in the middle of a Cayley and be like, oh, I really like your work, but you at least get to know the people a little bit.
Yeah.
So then maybe the next day during the sessions at coffee, you can go up and talk to them a bit more. And people will get to know your face and a little bit more about you. And I don't know, it's usually a good time. That's one of the things about conferences that you should take advantage of.
Yeah, the deep sea biology one is usually a total riot. I don't know. Different communities have definitely different styles of doing stuff, and they are usually a really good laugh.
Yeah.
End up swimming, doing karaoke, swimming across a lake, all kinds of stuff. All after one conference dinner, there was fishing gear in my shower in the morning. I don't even know where it came from. Must have been attached to me somewhere.
But those are the types of things that if you do them. You and some colleagues will talk about that years down the road.
Yeah,
it's the type of thing that cements those relationships,
yeah,
even though it's not, you know, immediately about your work, obviously. Or maybe it was. Maybe you were deep sea fishing at the time. I don't remember.
Well, so there's a very famous deep sea biologist at the University of Hawaii who, whenever he sees me, he wants to talk about karaoke.
I went to a crayfish conference in France, and one of the prerequisites for attending was to bring a bottle of your local liquor, whatever, local tipple. So I thought about bringing Iron Brewed, you know, being a bit of a cheapskate, because I was just on a Ryanair flight. I only had space for a small thing, but I brought some whiskey. And when I got there, there were over 20 different countries. So I ended up trying all kinds of mad...
That's amazing.
Yeah, spirits. Yeah. There was a Czech spirit. It was like creme de menthe, and it was pretty potent. But it was a good time, and like you said, it makes it less awkward because, you know, I'm still in touch with a lot of the people that I met at the social events.
Yeah, and you'll be in touch with them. I mean, for years after that conference where Dave and I met, we were emailing back and forth occasionally, and not necessarily about do you want to work together, but
just about naked running.
Yeah, exactly. But
we almost ended up working together in Canada.
Yeah,
didn't we?
That's true. Yeah, so, yeah.
Moving on to a sort of practical aspect, you know, this is a difficult time economically. We're all a bit skint. How do you go about getting funding for conferences, or the conferences that you've attended? Are there certain places you can apply for money?
Begging your supervisor.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. There is a lot of places that you can apply for money. British Ecological Society, I think, has money you can apply for. Society for Experimental Biology.
Do you have to be a member of these societies?
Probably. The Company of Biologists. I think you need to become a member first, usually.
Yeah. So my awkward Antarctic ecology experience was paid for by the Company of Biologists.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the Fisheries Society gave away quite a few scholarships for the World Fisheries Congress.
Yeah.
So it's worth checking out the websites of the conferences as well and seeing, you know, whether they've been able to negotiate anything in particular.
All of these societies and different disciplines usually have travel money.
Mm.
The other thing a lot of people don't think about is volunteering at conferences, because usually if you volunteer, then you get your registration and everything paid. I mean, you still need money to travel there, but sometimes if you write ahead and say, look, I'll volunteer to do the audiovisual for one of the rooms or something, and then, or for one session, they'll pay your way for the whole week, usually.
Yeah, that's really good.
Or a lot of times, not always.
Yeah, so I got my attendance to the World Fisheries Congress paid for by being on the committee. They paid for me also to go to the Marine Biodiversity Conference a few months ago as well, so that I could check out their e-posters, check out the opposition before this as well. So sometimes working on conferences is another good way to get to see more.
So
see how they work.
Yeah. Great. To finish off, have you got any funny conference stories, or what's your most memorable conference experience that you would, or embarrassing stories? Please spill.
I was trying to think of ones, and there's just so many. It's like, I can't even think of one. Like, it's one of those things where it's just overwhelming to think about all the awkward and embarrassing stories.
You can say it was me, David, because, you know, we don't have to.
Well, there was the Semantic.
Oh,
story.
That was really weird. Yeah.
That was weird.
That conference where David and I met, we were out at the pub one night and we started talking to this guy who had a conference name tag, right?
Yeah.
But he claimed to have been the inventor of Norton antivirus or something, or Symantec antivirus.
And yeah.
What?
Yeah, it was like this all really weird.
He had a driving license, so his name was Bill Symantec. So it looked a bit like Symantec. So he was claiming that he was the inventor of Symantec virus software.
Yeah,
and
then
Norton it was named after him. Yeah, that bastard.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Maybe just a really strange sense of humor.
I don't know. He was really sort of angry too.
He was angry, yeah. And but he claimed to be a multi-millionaire with a boat that he wanted to use for research and stuff. So I was really busy, you know, trying to chat this guy up. I thought this is gonna be fantastic. And meantime, one of the other girls there was telling him to stop being such a whiner about complaining about being a millionaire. And I'm thinking, shut up, you're ruining it.
Because the guy was just mad. I don't know why you came up with that story.
Well, it seems
it
like a weird
true.
Thing to pretend to be. Why would you pretend to be the founder of Symantec? Why wouldn't you pretend to be, you know, Michael Jackson or something?
I think it's because it was such a lame thing to pretend to be.
Yeah, that was
why
possible.
It sounded believable.
I remember last year or a couple of years ago at a conference, there was a guy who was giving two talks on the same day, but he got the days mixed up. And so he didn't arrive until after his talks were actually over. So he showed up and he looked at the schedule and like people told him that he'd missed his two talks. So check which days you're talking on. That's another.
Yeah. So is there any final talk tips for getting the most out of a conference?
So
that's one. Don't miss your talk. Check the schedule. So that may be it. Make sure you're well prepared before you go to the conference. Look through the program. See.
Yeah.
Being well prepared is a big one. Actually, trying to plan which sessions you're going to, especially if you're going to a big international conference where there could be 10 or more sessions running at the same time. At least look at the schedule and try and have an idea of which ones you're going to go to, and accept that you can't go to everything.
I would say be sensible about what sessions you try and go to. I quite often make the mistake of thinking, oh, well, I'd like to find out a bit more about that. I don't know much about that. I'll go to a session on it and find out all about it. But you kind of need to remember that everybody else there will be an expert on that subject, and you probably won't understand a word.
I don't know. At the same time, I've gone to sessions before where I didn't think it was necessarily my field, but there was maybe one talk that I thought was interesting, but then I stuck around. And sometimes when you go to the things that you wouldn't necessarily think would be interesting or appealing to your work, that's when you see something different that, oh, that's pretty cool, and it sheds a bit of insight on your own work or gives you a brand new idea. But it could go either way.
You must just be a lot cleverer than me.
No, so much of it goes over my head. I just get the baseline interest bits, that's all.
Any more tips?
Don't be afraid of really awkward conversations.
Yeah.
They're going to happen.
Embrace them.
I think that's the biggest one, yeah.
They will happen. Just
that's a life tip, actually. It's deep, right?
Yeah, don't be shy.
Yeah.
Okay. So on that note, thank you, everybody, for taking part in today's discussion. And we'll be back soon with some more survival tips on another subject soon. I don't know what that will be. I was just sounding really awkward now. I didn't really plan what to say at the end.
End the conversation.
Over and out.
I should say you have to go to the bathroom or something.
Yeah. I'm going to get another sandwich.
Thanks for listening to the Naturally Speaking podcast. If you've got any ideas for future shows or want to get involved, then please contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is naturallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. Naturally Speaking is a podcast from the Institute of Biodiversity, Animal Health and Comparative Medicine at the University of Glasgow. For more information, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at the NS Podcast. And you can download future episodes and find more information at our blog at naturallyspeakingpodcast.wordpress.com.
Okay, welcome to the second in our Survivor's Guide series, where today we're going to be learning how to survive a conference. So I've got I'm sitting for a discussion panel today. No, can I start again? Right. I'm just too cringe. Like, no, I can see David judging my radio voice.